Welcome to In Detail, the show where we take you behind the scenes of creative business. This is episode 3 of season 3, and you're listening to the dulcet tones of Warwick Mahaley, and I'm joined here once again with my lovely co-hosts, Kate Fitzgerald.
Hello.
And Mick Maloney.
Hey, friends.
And this is the third in the incredibly, incredibly named series of episodes on marketing, Marketing 103. And we're
so ashamed. We used to be funny. We used to have that funny podcast.
Come a long way from heroes and villains to this.
Yeah, this is garbage.
What has happened to our words? Mm-hmm. We've lost all the words. Fortunately, actually, though, we have someone on today. We're very happy to have a guest on today who has plenty of words, generally written with a background in copywriting. Amy Edwards is the boss and founder at Marketly, which is a marketing consultancy and copywriting company up in Brisbane. And Mahaley Slocum has just engaged her services to assist us with some of those said services. So very excited to see how that partnership comes out. And we thought we'd bring her on board to basically tell us about all the things we've been doing wrong and have been saying wrong over the last two episodes. And we're also going to find out about her business because, like us, she has been hustling and building her business over the last few years. Amy's kicked off Marketly in 2019. And I think we'll get you to tell us a little bit about that because I'm not sure if that was a good time or a bad time to kick off a new business just before a global pandemic. And before that, you were sort of working on that on the side while working in architecture. I was in architecture studio up in Brisbane doing marketing work for Archifield and then deciding to make a full-time go at it and it being much more successful than you thought it might be originally. So growing the studio now to yourself and to staff. Amy, hello, welcome.
Hello and welcome. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me here today.
Pleasure. Welcome.
You are the master of the long intro.
Oh my God.
I felt like I was just listening to Amy there.
Sorry. We can edit that out. I'm sure we can cut that down.
No, my friend. Not this time.
All right. I'm going to stop talking. And Amy, can you tell us the rest of your story?
Nothing left to say. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Thank you. I'll go. I'll now leave. Thanks for having me on the show. Thank you very much for having me on. Like Warwick was saying, yes, I worked in architectural practice and I did that for 10 years. And during that time, I was doing a bit of side hustling, really trying to build out my dream, which was really to build something like Marketly, but never maybe the timing was right. I'd also, had a young family, all those kinds of things. But it came to a point where I was like, I really just felt a calling and I had to do it. I could no longer kind of sit on the sidelines and wait. And perhaps 2019, maybe that was a good time. I felt like it was a good time, pre-pandemic times. Maybe if I'd known, I may not have jumped ship. So I think in hindsight, actually, it was perfect because I may not have ever done it. I may have just stayed put and been safe. But generally, the big leap to go out on your own is quite scary. Like I was waiting for the perfect opportunity, maybe a contract to take me on. I had another architecture practice who was interested in my services. And so they took me on for a 3-month gig. And I thought, okay, this is it. I'll jump ship. I'll see what happens, if it actually eventuates into anything, kind of crossing all fingers and toes, hoping that perhaps they might take me on a more long-term basis. And I mean, luckily for me, after that 3 months, they took me on a day a week. And then I also started going out and other people started hearing about what I was doing. And so it just kind of slowly, very organically built up from there. And then everything dropped off in the pandemic, of course. Everyone freaked out. And then I was quite terrified that I would lose the whole business side of things. But actually it was a great thing because it forced me to be to adapt quite quickly. I had to push myself out there on social media quite a lot, get out on video, put my face out there, way out of my comfort zone of anything that I ever wanted to do. But it worked. And the consistency of that actually brought in lots more clientele. And then I started bringing on staff here and there to help me out when it was busy patches. And then really in the last 12 months, it's just skyrocketed based off people's interest in content marketing and really needing help with that, particularly for architects. Like I think 90% of our clients are architects currently, but we also work with designers and creatives too. And they also wanted this strategy and direction. Like they sort of had all these ideas about what they wanted to do, but then they didn't really know how to get there and how to execute it and what was kind of a plan to help them get there. And then also lots of people through the pandemic wanted to do redesign, you know, their branding or their websites. And so I felt like we jumped in and just have done a lot of really broad things over that time. But it's really been responding to what's been needed in the marketplace pretty much.
I think that's a really good point. And it's something we haven't actually discussed in our very layperson marketing 101 or 102, that you actually need a strategy.
Well, so much like people
can go back and record some more into that.
Yeah, we'll put that back in. Yeah, but I think that is like we have strategy in so many other parts of the business that what do you think that, you know, having a strategy can bring to a firm?
I think it actually just allows you to take a step back and just have some perspective about more broadly about where you are now, where you've gotten to at this point, but also where you want to be sort of 5 years from now. Because I think, you know, brands and practices are always evolving. You know, it's not necessarily a light switch and you're changing direction 1 minute and then you're changing direction the other. It's an evolution. And I find, you know, to have really long-term success, it is that evolution that happens slowly and progressively over time. But particularly, and it's very successful for people who are checking in and looking at strategy. And by strategy, I don't mean like really overcomplicated marketing plans. And, you know, I think people can overthink it and then they terrify themselves and so they have no strategy. It can be as simple as saying, you know, we want to focus simply on this particular sector. This is our audience. And this is how we want to get there. And then developing some tactics on, you know, and maybe a method on how you're actually going to achieve that. I'm a big believer in strategy. Some people are more like, okay, tactical, how are we going to go quick and fast? But I always find for particularly for a lot of our clients, the ones that have a strategy and a long-term vision generally tend to have a much steadier growth within their practice.
What are some of the kind of the goals that architecture practices are putting forward? Like what are their aims? What are we doing this marketing for? Like what are you hearing people want out of their marketing as practices? Well,
there's a couple of different things. I think there's some people who really want growth. A lot of people are growth in terms of type and scale of work. Mm-hmm. Rather than just being reactive and saying, okay, well, someone's inquired with me and I have to, you know, go for that job. But actually instead saying, is this actually the type of work that we want to work on? Mm-hmm. But also then being able to put out from a branding perspective and from a marketing perspective, things that attract those types of clients. So then you're actually working on the projects that you want to work on. Because I think, you know, it's really easy for practices to get in that really reactive cycle and then they find themselves with a portfolio of projects that they're not entirely proud of. And then they're stuck or they feel stuck and they feel like they can't get out of that. So that's one element that I see. There's also this social media element, which is really interesting, I think, because there's a lot of people who are like, I want 10,000 followers, or I want 20,000 followers or 50,000 followers. And when I come back to asking them, you know, how many clients do you actually get out of that? A lot of them are like, oh, well, not really any, you know, or it hasn't really been that successful for us. Others it has been absolutely, but, you know, trying to focus on getting them to focus on quality over quantity is sometimes a challenge, because there's also everyone has an ego, and particularly probably designers and architects and everyone in that creative world.
How dare
and
you?
I think they see that. Oops, did I say that out loud? But yeah, I think there's an idea that you have to have numbers quantify something.
Mm.
Like you've reached some massive goal because you've got a particular number of followers. But actually, if you don't have the jobs coming in the door, then is that really success? So I think there's a few things like that.
Just back to your last point, I love that differentiation between reactive and proactive business. I think we talk about that as an idea a lot on here, about trying to be more deliberate about the things that we do. And I think marketing, and it's something we probably haven't talked about in the last couple of episodes, really, have we, about the opportunities that marketing can unlock. Because every architect, really, or almost every architect when setting up their own practice, kicks things off in a reactive way. You know, the first opportunity comes knocking, and that's how your business starts. And, you know, Marketly sounds like it's pretty similar, but it also sounds like you took the time very early on, which is what a lot of architects don't do, to think, okay, where is this headed? And I love the idea that marketing can be the tool that helps you do that, to say, I'm going to spend some time thinking about what I'm going to promote myself, how I'm going to promote myself as, who I'm going to promote myself to, because that's going to define so much about the sort of work that is going to end up in my portfolio and, you know, therefore generate more work for myself, for my office down the track. It's such a powerful tool.
And I think also, you know, it's also a lot of people think about it, yes, it's just for attracting clients and things, but it's also it's a branding exercise, but also for, you know, attaining new staff, like getting people to come into your team. You know, there's marketing doesn't have to always be just about winning work. And I think it can be quite easy to get caught in that too. So how do you talk about your culture or in your workplace? You know, why do people stay there, and why should people want to be a part of that, without it being a big hard sell and just saying, you know, using social media just to say, come and join my company, you know. And I know you're all probably finding a lot of that in your social media feeds at the moment. I think everyone's looking for staff, but it's being able to tell a fuller story about who you are. Yes, it's about the work, but it's also about brand and what you stand for.
So what did you study? How did you get into this, the world of marketing?
Yeah, well, actually, when I first left school, I actually had no idea what I wanted to do. I was too young. I actually really wanted to be in fashion design. That was kind of where I wanted to be. But at that time in sort of late 90s, people were like, what are you doing? Like, why would you want to do that? And so I worked in retail, in fashion retail, because that was kind of, I thought, okay, well, I'd done that. I'd worked in my father's business for a long time, and that was kind of where I like to be, and working with people, but also in business. And then I went a bit later on to study business and marketing, just at TAFE. And I thrived in that, and was about to go to university. And I had a fashion retail company who saw my background, obviously in retail and managing retail stores, but also in marketing. And so they brought me on, and I had a bit of digital knowledge at that time. You know, Facebook and things wasn't around, social media wasn't around, but email newsletters were. And so I knew how to do that a little bit. And so they brought me on in that stage. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I moved to another company and grew very quickly. So from leaving university and then up to a national marketing manager role for a national retailer, fashion retailer, then I got to the very pinnacle of where I thought I should be, and I actually found I was quite unhappy, and I was burnt out completely. Retail marketing is very fast-paced.
You were 21 years old.
Yeah, I wish. I think I was probably, I'm trying to think now, it's probably like 27 or 28 maybe, but I was completely burnt out. It was pre-kids, and I was pretty much going to quit the industry. I just was like, I don't know what I'm doing. A friend of mine was an interior designer at Arkfield, and she said, would you consider doing it? And I said, oh, look, I would actually, because I've always loved architecture, interior design. I grown up a bit with that around in my family. I, you know, and also artistic people in my family, and I loved that. So I went there not really having much expectation, and I found my people. Like, I just fell in love with it, and I realized this is kind of what I had been missing. And it gave me a chance. They had never had someone in place to do marketing or publicity for them ever. And so it kind of, they allowed me just to kind of run with it and be creative, which I loved, and but also use my kind of business acumen and also just public relations thing and really kind of grow their business and change and evolve how they were working. And then over that 10 years, then we changed really how the business was pitching themselves. And now they do some pretty cool stuff, some pretty big things, which is where they wanted to go in that time.
And do you feel that the business and marketing course that you did, but then also the experience working in the fashion industry. Mm. So obviously allied but different from architecture and from running a small business, small marketing business itself, and then working in architecture. In how many people was Arkfield when you were working there?
I think it was just over 55 at the time. So it had grown, or it was almost 60, I think.
Okay. So did those experiences prepare you well, do you think, for starting your own business?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe I think retail marketing showed me at what pace I didn't want to go, and also what I didn't want to do for my audience. I felt like in retail marketing, a lot of it's mass communication, and you're burning your audience and you're taking advantage of them. And that's what I really didn't feel comfortable about.
How does it burn the audience?
Well, you might be doing, say you use email newsletters. For us at the time, this was probably just on the cusp of Facebook really taking off. You might have done 3 email newsletters a day. And it was pretty intense. It was very sales driven. So very, rather than being brand focused, it was more about making money and, just making more, and that's very hard to keep up with that pace and be happy doing it.
Either as a writer or a reader, I imagine.
And just feeling comfortable with that, I knew that if I placed myself in the customer's shoes, there was no way that I would have been unsubscribing. You know what I mean? There were things that I just didn't feel comfortable with in terms of building long-term customer relationships.
Yeah.
And just building a brand that feels good and feels like it nurtures somebody. So it nurtures that relationship.
And what about the other aspects of business? Things like being an employer now.
Different, isn't it? Yeah. You all probably think that as well. I think I was listening to one of your earlier podcasts and I was just nodding along because I was like, oh my goodness, this is so me. I think none of it, I don't know if anything prepares you for dumping yourself in being a business owner. I'm not sure. I think at Arkfield they had a very entrepreneurial approach to how they did things. And I liked their way of working. And you know, around the time that I left, there was a whole lot of us who went out, and a lot of us have gone into our own business. So I think perhaps it was something in the way that they work. Everyone had a voice at the table. It was, you know, not as hierarchical, I guess, in that sense. But you know, everyone's ideas were valued, and I think I definitely have brought that across to how I run my business now.
That's a solid answer.
Is it?
It's great.
Yeah. I reckon a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know how to be able to link the two things up, something as kind of subtle as, you know, being able to listen to your team. And
well, I think I just think it's so important. I think because I had always, you know, before then I'd always maybe I'd felt that I wasn't heard or I didn't really have a voice, and I felt like it was a bit stifled. And I think it was a strong creative process as a practice. And I think they still do that to this day. Like, that's still how they work, where, you know, a graduate can join their team or a student and they can be sitting alongside a director and they've got just as much emphasis on a design idea as the director does. And I think, and that's valued. And I think that's really important. Mm. And I know that's definitely true for our team. You know, there's, I've got, you know, a really young team member and someone who's been in the industry a bit longer, and, but it's, everyone's got value to add, you know, and I think people get a bit shocked by that, I think, at first, because they're not really sure what they're supposed to say. They kind of freak out a little bit. But I think it's hugely valuable. If you can bring that across into your business, I think it's great.
Yeah, brilliant.
I feel I've been dominating question time. Do you guys want
to? I'm just curious as to, you know, you've pointed to sort of this idea of a lack of strategy, or even just sort of architects kind of focusing only on their social media numbers. Mm. What else are we doing wrong? What are you seeing? What are some of the clangers from?
I think overthinking it. There's one, I think that's one of the big things. I see a lot of people being completely paralyzed into inactivity because they're scared. I think they're actually fearful of what does it mean for, what does it, you know, what does it say about my business? What does it say about me personally? What does it say about us and our brand in the industry? What does it say to employees? And I think all of that is a huge amount of pressure that stops you doing anything.
I feel that pressure acutely every time I write a social media post or something like that. I just go, oh God, I don't particularly love writing. And I find it to be, you know, far easier to express myself with sketching or, you know, creating things than crafting words. And so I overthink it and I massively sort of, you know, get into my own head when I'm trying to do it.
And I think also, like, when you're in your head, then you also just think, oh, well, it's not really that worthwhile. Maybe it's actually not that interesting. Oh, why should I even do the post anyway?
Yeah, fuck it.
I'll just leave, fuck it, just go and do it.
Yeah.
The other thing too is, like, you know, you just said, you know, you really like sketching and drawing and doing that. Like, I would be saying, cool, if that's what you like, do that. Do more of that and show more of that, because that means that you'll get a bit of confidence. And I think if you get small wins, particularly on social media, I think it is really about confidence. And the more little small wins that you can have, the easier it becomes. Mm. You know, the longer you leave it, the harder it is to do it, because then you're putting more and more pressure on yourself. But I think that perfectionism or just, you know, things, you just want things to be right. That also stems beyond social media and into everything. And I think that can come into, you know, proposal writing. It can come into your website, it can come into branding or collateral. It's a whole lot of things. I think there's this level of, you know, particularly in the architecture industry, you know, you're creating things that are permanent. And I think it's very hard to think of marketing as not being permanent. You know, we're surrounded by content day in, day out. And as much as it's important, it is also forgotten as soon as someone's three scrolls past it. You know what I mean? It's a front of mind thing, which is good because people, you know, it's a reminder, but it's not forever. And I think
that's really interesting.
That's really like a trap that you can get caught in. Trying to think what other things that might be things that you
that's
could enough. Improve.
That's gold.
I think the reactive, proactive thing is a big one as well. I think there's so much that I see of that is just, you know, focusing on the wrong things or just slowing down a little bit, like slow down to actually get some clarity about what you're doing and then take off, you know, like that's, and I mean, that's probably why I'm a big believer in strategy, because I think.
Yeah, it comes back to strategy.
Yeah. If you're clear on that, it makes everything else so much easier, heaps easier. Mm-hmm.
With the what you mentioned about perfectionism as a trait, do you see a lot of architects, we've fallen into this before, where we only want to publish finished photography say, here we go, here's our kick-ass house, thank you. And then the next post will be, and then eventually you kind of run out of, you know, professional $2,000 or $5,000 worth of shots, and then you still want to communicate with your audience or your, you know, potential punters who are going to hire you, but you feel like you're sort of maybe saying the same things over and over again. Do you think that there's some sort of a better balance for those sort of perfectionists out there, where you can start to talk more about process or bring other things into your socials?
Absolutely. I think process is really important. If you can show that, you know, we've got to keep in mind that a lot of your clients probably aren't creatives themselves. And I think that's what's really, that's why people want to work with you, you know, is they're intrigued by that creativity because they don't have that. Maybe they don't have that themselves, or maybe they loved it when they were younger and they love that process and they'd love to be kind of in touch with that and understand how that works. And I think it also allows a level of transparency. You know, there's not that sense of, well, you come to me and I design your project and then it's finished, you know. That, yeah. And I think also a lot of, you know, a lot of architects get frustrated with clients because they think it is like that. They think it's start and then finish. But that's also what a lot of architects show, right, is we just show the finished stuff. So we make it look really easy, but it actually isn't. Like, there's a lot more in the process. And I think the more you can show people about the process, or even, you know, sharing what are the different stages, like how does this actually work, this idea of working with an architect, you know, that kind of thing is really valuable because, one, it allows you to build trust with your audience. So, and it also allows you to just kind of prep them before they even get to you. So they almost know a little bit about the process before they've got to you. So there's sort of none of these little hidden things where you go, oh, well, actually, yeah, we've got DD and CD and SD and whatever, you know, like, and they just freak out and they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. There's a lot of acronyms and...
Hell yeah, we love our acronyms.
Yeah, they do. You do, absolutely. But they don't really understand what that process is, you know, and they don't really understand the length of time those things take and how you work through those ideas. And, you know, you're great problem solvers, creative problem solvers. So I think, yeah, just keep that going.
This is what we were talking about in the last episode, Mick, about whether or not clients of architects know or can differentiate, not can, whether or not they do differentiate between architects being the makers of products or the providers of a service. And this might be one of those ways where we can help that conversation along by revealing more of the service provision rather than just the finished product as this kind of glitzy thing. Because, of course, when you think about other sort of designer things that we buy, be it fashion or cars or other things, we generally buy them well as manufactured objects. All of the work that's gone into them is already done. We don't have to worry about that stuff unless it's like a sort of, you know, made to order type of thing. And even then, we're not really necessarily involved in like meeting after meeting after meeting. The architectural engagement process is kind of unusual. It's very unusual for the most people's lives.
Yeah,
they're not there for fitting after fitting after fitting of couture. They're just buying, even if they are buying designer furniture or fashion, they're doing it from a shop. And so maybe we get conflated with that. Go and buy a Mercedes. Go and buy a work of architecture. It's the same kind of thing. They're just there ready and waiting to go.
Yeah, I think that's one of the feedback things that we get from nearly every client, is that they say, I didn't realize it was going to be this much involvement. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Not the effort. I don't think they're sort of saying in a negative way. They're always sort of blown away by, you know, when you talk about, you know, what is it that you actually want, you know, measuring up a client to see how high they can reach so that they can, you know, you can do their overhead cupboards or their hanging rail heights, you know, stuff like that. They go, holy shit, you know, this is amazing. I didn't realize that this was going to be quite so tailored or that I would actually have input into any of this. And we're like, well, you know, that's kind of the whole point.
Kate, do you measure the heights of your clients?
No. No, I don't. I'm not that good. I'm an inferior practitioner.
Oh, you got to do that. That's French kiss.
Yeah, we don't either, but we are definitely going to start because clearly That's hot stuff right there.
That's a benchmark that we are not living up to.
We're going to create a room where we scan our clients' full body dimensions.
Mm-hmm. Do it. Yep. But I think there's a lot of those red flags that you have from people too. Like a lot of those questions, if people are asking those questions, write them down, because I see those as an opportunity to let them know what the process is. You know, that's a good indication of what you should be sharing more about. If they're saying, I didn't realize what the process was. I didn't realize it was so long or whatever, or detailed, like talk about that. That's memorable for people. Mm. And it's interesting because then they're drawn into the process and they think, oh, wow, this is actually a really bespoke thing that's just for me. And it's designed just for me and my family or how I want to live.
Can you reflect, Amy, on the whole we just want to get published in magazines?
Yeah.
As our marketing, that's our whole thing. That's our whole shtick.
Yeah. It is. And I think it's really important that for architects that they think more broadly than that. You know, we were talking just briefly before the show started just about the idea of wanting to be in an architectural publication and what that means. You know, is your audience really there? Probably not. It's probably more about your industry and also for a lot of those publications, the readership isn't very high and maybe they don't have as regular number of issues. But in a more commercially driven publication or a lifestyle driven publication, they have a huge amount more, lots more readers. They're probably your audience and the exposure that you get out of that's really important. I also just think you've got to think beyond publications. Like, what else is there? Where is my audience living and where else can I reach them at? Maybe that's social media, maybe it's offline, you know, like maybe your clients aren't even online, like where else are they? It's got to be something that targets specific to your audience, but broad. Broad so that you can actually get them from a whole lot of different angles so that you have those touch points or those, you know, your front of mind for people.
Season 3 of In Detail is generously supported by our good friends at Architeam. For our 2.5 listeners who aren't members, guys, tell us why they should join.
Yeah, well, if you like this podcast, then Architeam is like the much better version of it. It exists to share knowledge and to help smaller practices thrive.
Thanks, Architeam.
Thanks, Architeam.
Okay, so talk, can you like expand a little bit on that? Because I think we were talking in the last episode about when a practice has got stuff done, and you know, the three of us have all been in practice for sort of a decade, give or take a couple of years, we so therefore have got a bit of a portfolio, mm-hmm. and have got work that we can show to the world. And so, but however, it's still a scarce resource, you know, and it's a scarce resource because we're not producing thousands of projects per year or even dozens of projects per year to do stuff with. Also, as soon as we commit to a marketing campaign for a project, it costs money, mm-hmm. both in terms of time and actual dollars. We were talking about the sorts of different things that you can do with that and the way that we're sort of also sort of hinting at how marketing can be like additive. I don't think we actually use that terminology, but it's not just about, all right, we're going to win an award and we're going to get it into a magazine and then we're done. And then that's it. We're finished.
Yep.
But how you can kind of keep on building on that. Like, maybe we should get this goodness off air so we don't have to share it with our listeners, because clearly this is...
Yeah, screw old. Those guys.
Screw those guys. Or, you know, we can be generous and Amy can be generous. What goodies, like what other, like what other, I mean, I made the joke a second ago and I'm reckoning the audio cut out and you didn't hear it because it was another amazing joke where I was talking about billboards. Did you guys not hear that?
No.
Missed it.
Okay, well, sorry.
Yeah, I think you may have cut joke. Out actually.
What?
What did you say?
I just was saying how we should look at billboards, get our work up on billboards. How great would that be?
Is it where your audience fine, is? Whatever.
Always terrible. Come back to yeah. you guys.
I find that we had a professional marketing consultant to tell us the merits or otherwise of that idea.
Yeah.
Amy?
Oh, dear. I think it always comes, you always have to come back to who's your audience and where are they and how can I best reach them? Yes, there's publications. Maybe there's TV if there's, you know, a great project that you can tell a story of, you know, throughout the construction of that. I think there's so much more online now across social platforms but also digital platforms, and then they've got their own audiences that they can shoot emails out to. Don't underestimate the value of email newsletters as well, by the way. A lot of people, that's where perfectionism comes in, and a lot of people don't do it because they, again, overthink it and freak out about it. But the return on investment of your time is huge. And I think, yeah, just don't underestimate that as a tool. Again, have a strategy about how you're going to do it. Don't say you're going to do one every week when realistically you can only do it quarterly, but just do it.
You guys have one of those?
Yeah, we do. I wish I did it more. But I don't.
Do you have one, Kate?
It is something we have one for new resident and we love it. Yeah, it's amazing. And we've always said we would put it in for Whispering Smith, so we will get it started soon. Thank you, Amy.
That's okay. You're welcome.
And you?
I wrote one and it took me, I think, 3 or 4 days. It was really great. And then I realized that there's no way I could be fucked doing this again. Yeah. So I didn't send it out because I realized that a newsletter needs to have some sort of recurrence and I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a commitment of time. I think that's the one thing that is tricky. It is time sucking. However, it depends on the format. And I think sometimes what we want to do is add too much in there. Keep it simple. I think with most of your marketing, keep it as simple as possible so that you're actually going to action it. You know, even if it's an email blast, it's just, we've just finished this project and we're really proud of it. Here it is. Maybe it's 2 things that are under construction, or do you know what I mean? Like, keep it easy for yourself. Don't overthink it again. Come back to just being able to put it out there and let people know what you're doing.
We do a quarterly one, and my favorite ever segment that we have, we just sort of break it up into bits, and there's no real format. We just have different things that are relevant each quarter, I guess. We used to have a staff member who never watched films, and so we got her to do film reviews. And we actually now have another staff member who also doesn't watch films. And so I'm going to bring this back. And so Eliza, who used to work with us, we had this thing called Lizzie Reviews. It was so good. So we got her to review films and she just never watched them. So she'd review these films that she hadn't watched. It was gold. It was obviously highly relevant to our work. But and I knew that we were hitting the nail on the head when I'd get this message from my dad going, I don't get this. And I was like, yes, great.
Him off. Awesome.
Awesome.
But I think it's like fun stuff. Like, keep it fun. Like, do things like that. You know, if you take it too seriously or there's too much structure around it, then I feel like sometimes that just can, it just is another barrier for you actually executing something. Yeah, keep it simple, keep it fun, but just do it.
How do you go marketing in a period where you don't need more work? Have you come across that question often?
Yeah, actually one of our clients at the moment is having that exact thing where they're booked like almost 18 months ahead. And I think the fear there is that they've got all this momentum. So like, do they want to grow their practice? Do they want to get more people in? And what they realize is strategically, they don't want to get bigger than what they are. So then it becomes a branding exercise. So it's more about, for them, it's more about creating this really, this fullness and depth with a brand, you know, where people can relate to that and feel like it's a warm hug, you know, or a warm embrace, you know, like you feel like, okay, they understand me. And so for them, what's fun for that is that you get to change things up, and rather than just promoting stuff, you're actually able to just draw people more into your brand and who you are. So I think that's really important. I think there is also a fine balance of booking so far ahead that then at what point do you turn people off and they go somewhere else? And then those people, how do you make sure you keep getting people coming to you, even though you're booked so far ahead in advance?
I mean, 18 months is a bit crazy. But I mean, we had during the end of second half of 2021, when things kind of just exploded after the lockdowns here in Melbourne, everyone suddenly went, yes, let's do some work. We developed a wait list. And I loved the wait list. I think having a wait list is fantastic. I mean, my answer to Mick's question, I'll get your thoughts on this as well, Amy, is when you have enough work, that's exactly when you've got to do marketing. Mm-hmm. Because when you don't have enough work, doing the marketing then, it's already too late.
Yeah.
Because marketing takes time, you know, like there's this sort of lag, particularly in residential architecture, because there's like this lag time between the thing going out and the person seeing it. And then maybe they see it, but that maybe they're a month or a year or 5 years away from actually wanting to buy your services, that you've got to kind of keep that machine rolling so that when they happen to be ready to buy, that you're there and ready. And Dave Sharp has talked about this on his podcast as well before, that I think he's even like shared statistics around it. He did some research or something, and he's like the vast majority of people who are engaging in architectural media, like well over 90% are not actually looking to buy services right now, which means that the majority of people consuming our content may be looking in the future but aren't looking right now.
Is that right, Amy?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people who are just watching, and because they enjoy it and they want to do it, it's aspirational, right? They want to do it one day, or it's on their on their want list of things that they'd like to do. And Dave and I have talked about that in some other conversations we've had about just in marketing in general. It's that consistency, you know, like if you're consistently front of mind for people, then it just makes the decision for them so much easier, because you've built that trust over a long period of time. They've been able to see your work. They've been able to see your process. But, you know, consistency is everything. Marketing isn't fancy, crazy stuff or big plans or big campaigns. It's kind of down in the dirty of just being consistent day in and day out.
It's interesting that comment, front of mind, because when you think about it, that's like what every ad, like if you think about advertising, like I've never seen a Coke, or very rarely seen a Coca-Cola ad right when I'm there ready to buy a fizzy, sugary drink.
Yeah.
Like the likelihood of that happening at exactly the right moment, I'm ready to, oh, you know what? Now that that is there, I'm not going to buy the Fanta, which is probably owned by Coke as well. I'm going to buy the Coke. That's not what it is. It's about being front of mind. So then when I do go and buy the drink, like the next day or whatever, that it then is the thing that, yeah, that's the one I want to buy.
Absolutely.
It's always front of mind, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's that brand experience, you know, because even with things, brands like, that's why Nike or Apple are really successful, is because they draw you in, because you want to be a part of that, you know, you want to be a part of their success. And, you know, even Apple, like a lot of that is just, they do so much is around the user experience and an experience of receiving something and unwrapping things and that feeling. It's like all the good feelings that come of that then imprint themselves in your brain and say, I want that again, you know, like it's that dopamine hit, like just keep doing it over and over again. Mm. But it is that brand feeling that will usually keep someone on board with you for a much longer period of time. Like you said, you don't go to the counter and think, I'm going to buy a Coke now because I've seen it. Often it's because you're just like, God, I could really do with a Coke right now. You know, because you've already been, I don't know, advertised to over a longer period of time.
Not inoculated, that's the wrong word.
Inoculously?
No, inducted, like just like, yeah.
Indoctrinated.
Indoctrinated. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mick.
Yeah.
We're hitting the 45 minute mark. So we might
Can I go one more?
Well, we've got to make time also for our hot five too, which we'll finish off with. But go, Mick, and then
maybe I could turn it into a hot five question.
No, we've got a very fixed, we can't mess with a hot five.
Oh, God.
Just ask your question and then we'll do the thing.
Where's the biggest bang for your buck? If you're a young punter starting out, Amy, where are you putting your very limited marketing spend?
Good question. I think if you're a startup business and you're a startup practice, go for social media and go hard at it. It's yours to lose. If you can do it well, you can be hugely successful at it. In attaining an audience and building a brand around that. It's a free resource, not free on your time. And that the time is the cost, okay, with social media, I think. But I think if you can delve into that really well, I think that's absolutely key. The other one for that is using the contacts you already have.
Yeah.
Asking them for work, asking them for referrals.
We weren't completely stupid, Mick. We were talking about using the resources you have and using time when you don't have money.
Exactly. We mentioned both of those things in Marketing 101, 102, the textbooks on architectural marketing really now.
Yeah, that's right. We'll refer to, I think there's a Harvard course on, that's on right. it already.
Yeah. All right. Rewritten the rule book.
Yeah,
but it's like marketing is very practical. Like just be practical about it. Practical and consistent. Don't overcomplicate it. Don't overthink it. Just do it.
Just no. Someone's already taken the just do it. Now I think we've been having some audio issues with Kate's audio, which is why she's been unusually silent. She's not angry at us or anything like that.
Pouting. Everyone.
She's pouting. Did you want to do the hot five, or are you actually struggling?
Yeah, you better do it.
Okay.
I'm sad to be giving up the hot five. Very sad.
Is it the hot five or the fast five?
It's both.
It's a hot five. I prefer hot five. Sounds sexier.
So this is just a series of off-the-cuff questions. Not off-the-cuff for us, but off-the-cuff for you.
Yeah.
Did Warwick tell you about this, or are you just bringing this on you?
Well, it wouldn't be the hot fast five if we let people know about them.
I think we can let them know that there are going to be some gotcha quests, gotcha journalism at the end of this.
No warning whatsoever.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We ask all of our interviewees these same questions and put you on the spot. Okay. Question one, what are your bank details?
Good try.
Nice. Nigerian.
Yeah, which just comes back around, isn't it?
Scam call classic back gag.
Classic gag. Okay. No, all right, you ready?
Yep.
So the idea is just offer, don't overthink it.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Question one. What resource has most helped you run your business?
Harvest.
As in the app.
Yeah. Harvest the app.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well done.
Are you taking all of them, Moz? Are we going to...
Oh, yeah, alternate? No, you can ask. Yeah, you okay, go. Sorry, go.
Number
sorry.
Two, you go. What's the best business book or podcast you've read or listened to this year? You can't say in detail.
No. I think the best book is, and it's an oldie, but I keep coming back to it, is Make Ideas Happen. It's brilliant and great for creative practitioners. 100% on
Make that. Ideas Happen.
Ooh, I like it.
I'm writing it down.
Is that like narrative journalism or is it more self-help guide?
It's very practical. Actually, I've even got it on beside my desk because I love it so much.
Wow.
Making Ideas Happen. There you go.
Scott Belsky.
That's correct. Huge, really practical ideas on how you can actually execute ideas from running a business through to marketing. Really brilliant. Highly recommend. I give it to most of my clients. They love it too.
Awesome. Cool. All right, Kate, you try this one. We'll give you a mic a crack.
Sure. No.
Yeah, you're on.
Sure, no.
Poor Kate.
She's shy.
Camera shy.
Dear listeners, we definitely have this audio thing worked out now.
We promise. No, we're nailing it.
You sure? Okay. All right. All right. Question three, which person in your industry are you most inspired by at the moment?
Good question. I definitely always come back to Seth Godin. I always appreciate all of his things. I think he has just hugely valuable practical advice and it's pretty accessible to most people, not just marketing people.
Great.
He writes really well, I think.
I think so too.
And his podcast.
Yes.
All right, Megan, what's a personal habit that has helped you significantly in your business?
Probably just getting out there, getting my face out there, probably, like getting in front of people and talking to people. That's probably the biggest thing is just getting out there.
Mm.
Like making
meetings. My worst habit is absolutely procrastination, though. That would be my other one. Bad habit.
We don't have that question in there.
We should make this the hot
worst personal habit.
And lucky last, what advice do you wish you could give your younger self when you were just starting out in your business?
Just go for it. Don't be so scared. Just get on with it and just have a go. It'll all work out in the end.
If it hasn't worked out yet, it's not the end.
It's not the end. Exactly. Exactly.
That's a John Lennon quote. Great answers. Well,
I loved all of that. And I especially loved, I just wrote in my notes from very early on in this interview, Amy, about what you said about marketing being this constant thing that buildings, you know, we build for a building forever, but marketing keeps, it's like almost like a river that it just sort of, it's continually replenishing and there's always something new to add, but it also dissolves and it's fairly ephemeral. Mm. That's something I haven't really got yet. That's been
the
big takeaway for me.
Amy's or yours?
I added it.
Powerful metaphor there.
I do. I really like that idea of the river. I think I'm going to steal that.
You can use
it's all yours.
But I think that's really true. I think it just ebbs, and it also ebbs and flows. And I don't know. I think
maybe it's the ocean.
It's just part of it. Yeah, it just is. And there are going to be times when you use it a lot, and there's going to be times that maybe you don't use it as much. But that it's always a constant through everything that you do. I'm glad that was useful for you anyway.
I don't think an ocean ebbs and flows, Mick.
What does it do? Flotsam like, and jetsam.
It flotsams and jetsams. No, that's what it does. It tides. It tides in and out.
Doesn't
it's the one who swims in the ocean.
Ebb and flow. I thought ebb and flow was a tide thing.
Yeah, it's a river.
Nah, you've gone.
Full of sharks.
Full of sharks.
In Western Australia. That's what it is. It's terrifying. Love it. It's deep and it's full of sharks.
And this is a perfect outro to our theme song in the Indian Ocean.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Amy. That's been like super illuminating. I give us a 6.5 out of 10 on our content from episodes 1 and 2, based on what you have now talked to us about. Like, not like okay. Do you think that's a fair score, Mick?
Yeah. No, we just can't put this podcast episode first, or no one's going to listen to the first two.
That's fair. Yeah.
No, that was great. Thank you, Amy.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good. It's fun to talk about it, actually, to talk about marketing and business. I kind of don't get to talk about it too much. I mean, I do talk with clients, but I could talk about it all day. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, you do talk about it all day.
We crack on about literally. It all the time here at In Detail, so...
I do love it.
We'd love to have you back on a later episode, maybe next season or something, to recap on some of this, because I think we're going to get a lot of questions about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoot them away. I'd love to do that.
Speaking of which, thank you, dear listeners, for joining us for another episode. You can find us at www.indetail.show. You can, of course, listen to us wherever you get your favourite podcasts. If you'd like to reach out, we're on Twitter at In Detail Show. Thank you to the gorgeous Sean Gorman for our theme music, as always. We will see you. We won't see you. You'll hear us. We won't.
Smooth.
Oh, yeah. I'm cool. Very cool.
Seamless, man.
Seamless. Yeah. Incredible outro. You'll be hearing from us soon.